Our next case is Corinth Pipeworks Pipe Industry SA versus United States, docket number 23-2094. Okay, Counselor Senko, you have reserved 5 minutes of your time for rebuttal, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the appellees, Counselor Akers, you're going to speak for 13 minutes, and Counselor Brightbill for 2 minutes.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, we're ready when you are.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Brian Senko on behalf of Plaintiffs Appellants Corinth Pipeworks. We respectfully request that this Court remand this case back to Commerce as Commerce's application of adverse facts available was based on Commerce's own clear error. As a result of this error, Commerce reversed its methodology from calculating a 0% dumping margin for CPW in the preliminary results to relying on AFA in the final results and assigning CPW a dumping margin of almost 42%. Commerce's application of AFA was not supported by substantial evidence and not in accordance with law as both a factual and procedural matter. As a factual matter, Commerce's application of AFA against CPW was not supported by substantial evidence for two reasons. First, CPW did not withhold information as its costs fully reconciled.
Just to be clear, you're not challenging any of the methodology that was used in the underlying case, correct?
No, Your Honor. We are challenging the methodology. We're challenging Commerce's methodology. We're challenging, and that's the heart of the issue, that Commerce never disclosed that it made.
Different than, let's say, procedure. The procedure that it employed in this particular case, like its decision to go to AFA, that as opposed to any methodology it's used to calculate dumping margins.
No, okay, yes, correct, Your Honor. We are not debating how the dumping margin is calculated. We're debating Commerce's methodology to calculate, okay. to assign that dumping margin. And to Your Honor's point, Commerce requires a cost reconciliation to verify that a respondent's reported cost and sales are accurate and tied to its financial statements. And here, Commerce departed from CPW's cost reconciliation and performed its own analysis.
Can I just ask this? So one of the things, at least one of the things that I think Commerce said and the Court of International Trade, I think, concluded was that the manner of your presentations was left so much to be desired, was so opaque that constituted a kind of impeding of the proceeding, so that even if somewhere in the massive material you might find all the information, that's not enough. And therefore, 1677EA properly applies.
Your Honor, that's rebutted by the fact that Commerce itself, there can be no reasonable conclusion that CPW's reconciliation wasn't clear when Commerce itself was able to get CPW's cost to reconcile, but for its clear error to twice deduct CPW's cost of semi-finished pipe. Had it not made that error...
But why isn't it enough to say when the respondent presents so messy a set of materials that part of what comes with that is the risk that, I'll exaggerate a little bit, after heroic efforts by Commerce to figure out what the answer is to the question that it needs to ask, it gets something wrong, that's the equivalent of essentially not being given usable information. And so it comes to perhaps incorrect conclusion that there wasn't, in fact, a reconciliation, and therefore it just can't use the costs, which I think is what happened here, right?
Yeah. Well, Commerce, Your Honor, Commerce's mistake could have been easily resolved had it followed its statutory mandate under 19 U.S.C. 1677E, which is subject to the conditions of 19 U.S.C. 1677ND, and provided CPW with this notice of the alleged error that Commerce identified.
Except for the word obtained.
That's 1677NG, Your Honor.
This is a different point?
Yes. Yeah, so this is 1677E, Your Honor, is subject to the provisions of 1677MD. I will address MG as well, Your Honor, but this is a separate statutory provision.
1677MD is the argument you did not make to the Court of International Trade, correct?
Your Honor, we made the argument under 1677EA that it was that its application of AFA was not supported by substantial evidence. We clearly made that below. And then the Supreme Court has held that as long as a claim is properly presented when it's brought forward before brought up before the appellate court, the arguments don't have to be exactly the same. And so therefore...
But a violation of a different statutory provision, that's... I mean, there's always a difficulty of separating kind of new issues from new arguments in support of the same position on an already raised issue. This kind of seems like on the new issue side of the line.
No, Your Honor, in that 1677EA is the preconditions that you have to apply before applying facts otherwise available. And then B is the adverse inference. And EA is subject to 1677MD. So it's subject to that provision, which provides that when Commerce identifies an alleged error, in this case it was actually Commerce's error, it has to provide a respondent with notice and an opportunity to comment. And here, the burden is on Commerce to make its request clear. And here, CPW had no reason to know that Commerce continued to find its reconciliation was unclear after CPW responded to the second supplemental questionnaire. And that's because CPW employed the same methodology that implied in the investigation. The record demonstrates...
And just help me understand this. I thought your first response, Commerce said, this is deficient, so we're going to give you another opportunity. At that point, isn't D satisfied?
No, Your Honor. And it gets back to the Hitachi case, which quotes the SKF case, in that if Commerce is going to find an error, it has to make that error clear to the respondent. So in this case, Commerce provided, in the first supplemental questionnaire, it said the reconciliation was unclear, provided a template, and said that template may vary by situation. And then in the second questionnaire, supplemental questionnaire, it asked very detailed questions on CPW's reconciliation, including it asked about specific figures and specific values and why CPW reported things in the reconciliation the way it did. CPW answered all those questions. And then it did never disclose to CPW that it found that its cost didn't reconcile because of these double-counted costs. And then it used CPW's calculation in the prelim. CPW had no reason to know as it followed the methodology from its initial investigation. And Commerce then had 6 months to seek further clarification from CPW, which it did not do. And it's mandated to do that both under 1677 ND under 1677 NG, getting to your...
Does the record tell us when Commerce first completed its own effort at reconciliation and found that the numbers didn't match up?
And that's the whole point, Your Honor. The linchpin to Commerce's analysis, its reconciliation didn't occur into the final results.
So there wasn't 6 months left. And I guess I'm conjuring a scenario in which, you know, everybody at Commerce is busy trying to figure out what to make of this material, and nobody can figure it out. And the day before, you know, they want to complete the investigation, somebody says, I sort of see how these things are put together, and it may contain a mistake.
It's still Commerce's obligation, once it found that mistake, to bring that before CPW and give it an opportunity to come.
It didn't find the mistake until you said, look at this, Your Honor,
in the reconciliation chart, which was not disclosed until the final results, the whole basis of Commerce's AFA was it found that there was these alleged double-counted costs. CPW's accounting system accumulates the cost, so you have bare pipe, then you have coated pipe, then you have lined pipe. And in CPW's reconciliation, it removed these double-counted costs because otherwise the reported costs would be essentially inflated. Commerce, when it did its reconciliation and departed from CPW's, it made the error to twice deduct these costs. If it hadn't...
The question, I think it's similar to what Judge Toronto is asking you, is after Commerce has obtained all the information it can obtain, giving you multiple chances, it does the best it can to figure out whether things reconcile and what the right calculations are. If it makes a mistake at that last point, what is it in these statutes that gives you the right to be heard in response to that mistake, that if you've been heard appropriately up until that point?
Okay, so 3 points, Your Honor. 1677AEA, which is, as I said, 1677MD, 1677MG, which says that factual information that Commerce uses as to base its determination, it must be able to comment on.
But that doesn't include a calculation.
Your Honor, this isn't just a standard margin calculation, though. This is Commerce departing from CPW's reconciliation and performing its own analysis. And that's consistent with what Commerce has found both in this case. So, for example, Commerce put a margin calculation on the record and allowed for comments after the prelim. And Commerce, in other cases, has sought a voluntary remand to allow parties to comment on information that it places on the record. And the last point, Your Honor, is that there's also persuasive case law establishing that when Commerce changes its methodology between the prelim and final, that it should provide an opportunity to comment. So that's the third reason, Your Honor. And under any of those reasons, we win, in this case, should be remanded back. I see I'm running up towards the end of my time.
We may have more questions here, Judge. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll restore you back to your 5 minutes. Now,
thank you very much, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'll start with the argument related to 1677 subsection G. That doesn't apply here, as Your Honor Stark noted, to Commerce's calculations. That statute provides that Commerce must provide an opportunity to parties to comment on information submitted to the Department of Commerce. That's precisely what happened here. After the close of the information collected, before the preliminary results were issued, and after, Commerce provided an opportunity for the parties to comment on the preliminary results. That was the close of the information submitted.
I just want to be clear. I thought you might be saying two somewhat different things. One is calculation is not information. And the second is, even if it is, it was not obtained by Commerce. It was generated in-house.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's why 1677M subsection G doesn't apply.
Which one? Did the obtained part or the information part?
Both, Your Honor.
But if calculation is not information, then what information did they not supply?
The information that Corinth did not supply was
a calculation.
No, Your Honor, it was the reconciliation of the costs. That was the information.
Isn't that just a particular kind of calculation?
It's a type of calculation. It's certainly data that Commerce requested that wasn't provided to it in the form and manner of the request. And so because...
Right, if, as might well be the case, they provided every bit of raw data, but not the calculation that showed how to figure out the answer to the particular question, then... And you consider calculations not to be information, then they didn't fail to supply any.
Well, Your Honor, Commerce's calculations are not new information that's submitted. Commerce's calculations are based on the data.
I just want to keep straight between the two things, whether the calculation is not information or whether, even if it is, it wasn't submitted to or obtained by, I guess both words are in 1677MG.
Our position is that calculations by Commerce are not new information that fall under M subsection G, such that there has to be an additional opportunity to comment on those. That's Commerce's calculations. As it relates to the application of facts available and facts available with an adverse inference, Corinth did provide a lot of data that could perhaps have underlied those calculations, but didn't provide in the form or manner requested by Commerce, and thus essentially made it impossible for Commerce to reconcile. So sure, it did submit data in a huge voluminous data dump, but it did so in a way that significantly impeded Commerce's ability to reconcile. And because it impeded Commerce's ability, that warranted facts available, and because Corinth had numerous opportunities to submit in the form and manner requested and refused to do so, that demonstrated that Corinth did not act to the best of its ability. So the form and manner in which Corinth replied to the Department of Commerce is what warrants the facts available and the facts available with the adverse inference.
Can you remind me, do you dispute before us that Commerce made a mistake?
In what regard, Your Honor? I don't believe so.
About the mistake that they pointed out after the final results.
The double counting.
The double counting.
No, we do not agree that there was a mistake there. And in fact...
How was there not a mistake? I guess I'm vaguely remembering, and you'll just correct me, that the issue here was the internal carrying of costs through multiple stages, which end up having to be, if you want to have each cost counted only once, you have to keep kind of backing things out. And at least they say that there was one pretty important bit of cost that was not backed out by Commerce, and that resulted in the difference between they reconcile and they don't reconcile.
Sure, that's Corinth's point. Commerce's response to that is Commerce could not reconcile because the information was not submitted in the form and manner requested. So attacking sort of the substance of the attempted reconciliation is outside of the legal argument of whether Commerce provided the opportunity to submit this information, whether facts available.
Right, I realized I was asking a question different from what you were talking about. So let's put that aside. Does Commerce have... Do you have an explanation for why Corinth is wrong in asserting that there was a double counting in Commerce's calculation?
I would just point, Your Honor, to...
I don't think there was such an argument in your brief.
There wasn't an argument in our brief, Your Honor, and that's because it's largely irrelevant under the legal issue that was appealed here. The Department of Commerce at Appendix 9015, I would point, Your Honors, to... in their final results specifically, address its attempts at reconciliation. Commerce attempted to reconcile the cost data because Corinth didn't provide its own reconciliation as repeatedly requested. So Commerce was going above and beyond trying to make sense of this data. The point here is that because Corinth repeatedly failed to provide the data in the form and manner requested, Commerce had had essentially no ability to reconcile the data, and that's why it had to resort on facts available with an adverse inference. Now, Corinth arguing, well, you could have reconciled it this way or this way, doesn't remedy the repeated deficiencies throughout the course of the administrative proceeding of Corinth's own making. If Corinth wanted its data to be able to be reconciled, it should have presented it in the form and manner that Commerce requested. And so any sort of attempt now to say, well, Commerce inappropriately or inaccurately reconciled our information, ignores that it was Corinth's responsibility to reconcile its information. It's the parties, the respondents' job to create an adequate record, and it repeatedly failed to do so. So any errors that Commerce made attempting to help Corinth reconcile is separate and apart.
Suppose that in this case, and the question is about, has this happened before, or maybe just hypothetical, that after Commerce slaved away with all of this opaque information and, at the end of the day, it actually sees that they reconcile. Could Commerce at that point say, never mind, the fact is you impeded the proceeding, and we should not have to go through all of that effort and do all of the work that the party is supposed to do, and then apply 1677 EA?
I believe under the statutory language, yes, Your Honor, as long as there's a finding that there was a significantly impeded the administration of the proceeding, like
here.
Commerce
ever done that sort of thing where it does a lot of work, far more work than it should have had to do, and concludes that, in fact, all the information here, the reconciliation to make sure that the costs were in fact accurate. Has Commerce said, nevertheless, in that circumstance, or have we even addressed whether Commerce can say 1677 EA still applies?
I'm not aware of a case off the top of my head, Your Honor, but I imagine yes, because Commerce can ultimately spin its wheels and come up with some sort of calculation doesn't mean that a party didn't act to the best of their ability. So Commerce does go
above.
I haven't
even gotten to B yet.
Sure. But just because, same logic, just because Commerce ultimately can spend exhaustive efforts calculating the reconciliation doesn't mean that the party didn't significantly impede Commerce's ability.
I have a question on 1677 MG, and this is with respect to the providing the opportunity to be heard when new information is submitted. To whom does that opportunity extend? If Party A is in the dumping procedure and it submits information which Commerce declares that it can't use, kind of what we have here, then does that give Party A the right to comment on its own information that it submitted?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that under the statute, the statutory language, parties have a right to comment on all information that's submitted to the Department of Commerce or the administering authority before the record, once the record closes. So there is a right to comment on the factual
in
record.
In the course of a dumping proceeding, are there other phases where you can comment on the information? For example, verification comments?
Correct. In this case, for example, the petitioner submitted a pre-preliminary results brief. So there's certainly opportunities throughout the proceeding. And in fact, that's a perfect example of how Corinth actually did have the ability to comment on AFA. The petitioner submitted a pre-preliminary results brief and argued to Commerce that AFA should apply. Then after the preliminary results, the petitioner submitted another case brief arguing that AFA should apply. Corinth responded in a rebuttal brief and argued why AFA should not apply. So this isn't a case where Corinth had no opportunity to comment on the application of AFA. It did so prior to the final results.
Corinth cites some legislative history for 1677 MG, essentially that Someone in their position is entitled to know all the essential facts before Commerce makes its final determination. I didn't see a response to that legislative history. What's your view?
Sure. The legislative history generally provides that, exactly, that parties have an opportunity to respond to the information. That's entirely consistent with the statute and entirely consistent with their argument. Commerce did provide Corinth an opportunity to respond to the factual information on the record. They did so. They submitted a case brief. That is separate and distinct from Commerce's calculation between the preliminary and the final. And if Corinth's argument were right and parties had an opportunity to respond to any distinction between the preliminary and the final, there would be an endless cycle of comment, Commerce makes a new determination, comment, Commerce makes a new determination. It's typical that Commerce makes a change between the preliminary and the final, and incorporates the comments that were made after the preliminary. Commerce, as your honors know, has strict statutory deadlines that it has to abide by, and so it doesn't have the opportunity, and it's certainly not required, to permit this endless cycle of comments on its analysis. But importantly here, Commerce's analysis on the reconciliation was based on the same facts and data that were already on the record. No new information was added after the preliminary results. And I'll yield the remainder of my time to counsel. Okay. Thank you.
Counselor Bragbeal, you have 2 minutes.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I think the Justice Department's arguments were very well stated, and I will just reinforce that Commerce's decision to reject plaintiffs' cost data and apply adverse facts available was supported by substantial evidence. It was consistent with the statute. If you look at, and the lower court properly held this too, the plain language of 19 U.S.C. 1677 MG provides for the opportunity to comment on new factual information submitted by interested parties during a proceeding. Commerce's reconciliation table, its heroic efforts after three bites at the apple by plaintiff, is not new factual information submitted by an interested party.
You, like the government, don't defend the Commerce's double counting. As the case comes to us, it looks like a pretty obvious error, recognizing we're sitting here with hindsight, et cetera. But it's a little unsettling, and you don't defend it, do you?
Your Honor, I'm not a cost accountant. I looked at the exhibits that were created after the fact for the lower court and submitted for this court that were not provided during the course of the proceeding. You know, even in Justice Department is correct. Even if an error was made, the fault was entirely, and the misunderstanding is entirely plaintiff's. And Your Honors are correct. Commerce did make heroic efforts here. The burden of creating an adequate record is on the parties, not on Commerce. That's the Nanya case. And the language in the cost memo is unusually direct. Commerce undertook what it called a long and exhaustive analysis. It explained in the second supplemental questionnaire and put plaintiff on notice, your extensive calculation worksheets and reconciliation are difficult to interpret because of the lack of adequate descriptions. That's in the appendix at 6496. That is the problem here. And the cost reconciliation is foundational. Without it, Commerce will not consider costs to be verified. You have the Hyundai case on that. You have the protein quill case on that. So we ask that you affirm.
Can I just ask you, I think I asked Ms. Akers, are you aware from your work in this area of a situation where the invocation of 1677EA rests only on the opacity of the material, that is the impede sub, paragraph or something, where despite that, Commerce figured out an answer that was favorable to that respondent?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of something exactly on point. I would point you back to the Hyundai case where there was a failure to comply with the reconciliation format and a failure to provide requested details. And that was found to be a basis for application of adverse facts available and upheld by this court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, sir.
Your Honors, 3 points. The first point and the key point that Your Honors addressed to my fellow counsel is that there wasn't a dispute that Commerce made an error in this case, and that's key. And I think it's key to understand that CPW is not required to be clairvoyant. It's not required to be a mind reader. So I just want to go over the facts again. CPW submitted a reconciliation, and for Your Honor's reference, in Appendix 7028 to 7024, it goes step by step how it reconciled its costs. And then in Appendix 7721, I want to make clear that CPW did submit a reconciliation, that its costs fully reconciled. So CPW submitted that reconciliation, answered detailed questionnaires on its reconciliation and the second supplemental questionnaire. Commerce then used its data to calculate a margin of 0% for CPW. CPW then didn't hear anything. To address counsel's point on they had an opportunity to brief it, the petitioners argued for the basis of AFA on the cost reconciliation in their pre-prelim comments, and Commerce rejected that. And then in their case brief, their arguments were substantially similar, and CPW responded to them, and again, Commerce never disclosed its own clear error to depart from the reconciliation and twice double count the costs. And that's why you were here. Had CPW disclosed that, they could have corrected Commerce's mistaken understanding. And on second point is on 1677NG. Your Honor got to the legislative history of the statute, and that's directly on point, in that the legislative history makes clear that all interested parties should be informed of the essential facts and ensure that all parties have an opportunity to comment on any factual information.
Has this come up in, you know, outside the trade context in, you know, APA world generally, where an agency even does a calculation, but does some bit of reasoning that in the final rule, for example, or other final decision that hadn't been expressed before? Is there other case law?
I can't think of an exact case, but it gets to the concept, I think, of Your Honor saying of due process and the fairness and equity, and that...
By the way, does APA 554 apply here or not? You may, if you don't know, never mind.
Yeah, generally, the APA applies in these cases, but we don't always get to that. We rely on the statute, but generally, yes, the APA would apply to all of Commerce's decisions.
Are you familiar with any of our patent case law? Or is
on top of my head, no. Your Honor, my apologies.
You should be happy about that.
I'm in the niche of the trade world, which is deep enough.
Well, let's go back to this double counting error. Does it really matter in this case? Does it matter to you? Did you rely on this somehow?
On
the double counting error that you're talking about.
CPW, no, the double counting error was Commerce's error, and that's the whole point, was that had it been disclosed, CPW could have corrected Commerce's misunderstanding. What CPW relied on was Commerce using it, and that's why I was going through the facts, Commerce using its margin calculation, not disclosing. CPW was verified in the initial investigation and followed the same methodology.
How does that bear on the alleged failure to provide reconciliation costs in a certain format?
It bears on that there was a reliance by CPW that it had followed Commerce's past procedures and that Commerce never directly asked it why those procedures were no longer applicable. So there was a reliance component on CPW's. And just to conclude, I see my time's ripening up. In sum, Commerce violated its obligation to allow CPW to comment on Commerce's new methodology, which was based on a clear error. This violation renders the final results as not supported by substantial evidence and otherwise not in accordance with law, and this court should vacate the judgment of the lower court and remand it back to Commerce. Unless you have honors have any further questions?
Nope, thank you. We thank all the parties for their arguments this morning, and this court now stands in recess.